Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion. It's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Thursday, June 5th, the Dodgers and Mets are trading blows just like Elon and Trump on Twitter. We are back. It is Deferred Collusion. It's me, Jesse Rowe, the king of Crespi, joined as always by Lord Paramount of Torrance, California, Brandon Bullinger. Dodgers split 2-4 with the Mets after a big-time comeback win today. And of course, the heroes of the day are every Dodger fan's favorite, Michael Conforto and Tanner Scott. But first, it's my boy Brandon Bullinger. What's up, Lord Paramount? How are you, buddy?
Oh, Jess, I'm fired up. Series split with the Mets. Would have liked to have, maybe got the season series win over them, but that's neither here nor there. I'm happy for
should
the
Should have taken day. Game one.
Should have taken game one, but you know what, dude? I should have been a little bit taller. I should have been a baller. Don't forget, yeah. I don't know if I called her. I don't remember the lyrics, but yeah. Something about that. Jess, Deferred Collusion, we're back. I'm happy.
It's actually
to
one of my favorite songs.
Really?
Yeah, I love that song.
I would never guess that. You look more like an Arcade Fire guy to me.
I mean, yeah, sure. But I mean, like, from that era of my life, like, when I was a kid, like, I wish I was a little bit tall. Of course, come on. One of my favorite songs.
Yeah, I got really into, East Bay, like, hyphy music, like, Mac Dre,
I was
like, really into just getting, like, my this face and, like, just getting dumb and just, I'm dating myself right now. But, oh, my gosh.
You are, dude.
Oh, speaking of dating ourselves, you know who our favorite player is? The oldest tenured player on any single team, Clayton Kershaw. I got to see him pitch on Tuesday night, Jess, over at Dodger Stadium. I got some pretty sweet tickets right next to the third base foul pole. Row C, so we're actually four rows back from the field. But it was Filipino Heritage Night. My daughter was fired up. It was a little bit annoying. There was only two places to get a jersey. You have to buy a special ticket to get this like Filipino-themed jersey, which was super dope.
Oh, okay.
We're entering at the top of the stadium. If you've never been to Dodger Stadium, it's like built into like a mountainside or like a hillside. So the top of the stadium is significantly like higher. Then the bottom, go figure. And as we're scanning our tickets through the little electronic scanner, I like watch the security guard like to the family in front of us like hand a couple jerseys and just go like, we're out. And we scanned our tickets, so now we're in this like in between, like we got to go through security, but we can't go scan our tickets anywhere else, and they're out of jerseys. So luckily there was like 25 other people with us. We got like ushered to center field, and they took care of us and gave us jerseys. So shouts out to Dodger Stadium for fixing a problem pretty quick and prompt. But Jess,
they're always, I mean, top notch at Dodger Stadium.
Dude, the food was incredible. I tried something for the first time I've never had at Dodger Stadium, a barbecued, fully loaded baked potato. It had like mac and cheese on it, barbecue brisket, barbecue sauce, a little bit of the, dude, it was fuego. That's fire in Spanish, if you're wondering.
Oh, wow. I mean, you know, I got to say, that was one of the things about going to Kansas City and visiting Kauffman Stadium was the food. Just how fucking how many crazy barbecue options they were. But I do feel like that's the place where Dodger Stadium has really made some headway and gained a lot of ground over the last, you know, especially in the Friedman era. They've really, like, they've become top notch. They don't just treat the players well, they're treating the fans well at Dodger Stadium.
Absolutely, too. Dude. And what's really cool, so we went on Filipino Heritage Night, and as you could imagine, there was a ton of flips. Shouts out, Hagita, my peoples. But, like, my wife's, like, aunt and uncle and, like, her cousins were all out there, and, like, they don't watch baseball. I think her aunt told me, she's like, I haven't been to a Dodger game since the 80s, but they're like, we want to see Ohtani, and, like, so Dodgers are a box office draw right now. They're pulling people outside of the sport in, like, it's a literally for special events. I mean, there was, like, a longanisa hot dog. We saw the line for it, like, from Dueling Dogs, like, out in the, like, left center field pavilion, like, wrapped around the stadium. A longanisa is, like, a sweet, like, almost like, it's like a breakfast sausage, but it's a Filipino fire with pork.
That
it's
sounds, like, so good. Oh,
dude,
my God.
It's so good. Yeah. We didn't even get any Filipino food. There was, like, a ube bread pudding. They sold out by, like, the fourth inning. My point is there was, like, a bunch of people who were there just for the spectacle and to try the, like, fare, you know, the food and drink. It's almost like if you've ever been to, like, Disney's California Adventure for, like, food and wine festival. It's like, yeah, there's people here to be at the amusement park, but there's also people just getting wasted, like, trying food. It's pretty sweet.
Ube is, like, the purple stuff, right? It's like it's like made from, like,
it's yam.
Dude, like, so yeah, my wife's cousin is married to a Filipino girl, and they own a bakery, and so she's sort of done, like, her own, like, hybrid, like, modern bakery mixed with, like, Filipino flavor. So she's done a lot of ube stuff. It's so good. It's fire.
If you've never tried ube, please do it. There's ube flavors of everything readily available. But Jesse, before we jump into this Dodger series, what Clayton Kershaw looked like in person and everything else going on in the league, don't forget to like, subscribe, comment, tap in with us. We just became official YouTube content creators, so thank you guys. Our freaking subscribers, our new fucking, like, buddies in the comment section, love talking that good shit with you. And to all the haters, thank you for tapping in and giving us reasons to get better. So
yeah, we've officially
officially
passed 1,000 subscribers on YouTube, which was pretty awesome. So we're officially in the YouTube Partner Program. So now unfortunately, you're going to start seeing some ads on these videos. We're sorry, guys, but it's much better for the long run because it's just a way that we're going to be able to keep, you know, doing this on the side and making this podcast and bring it to you guys. So appreciate it. If you guys would just please watch the ads for us, that would be really helpful. Because that helps us. Yeah.
Thank you for just joining us in general. It's an absolute pleasure. Talk some ball, dude. It's my break room, Jess.
Dodgers had a big comeback win today. They were down 4-0. It was certainly looking like the Mets were going to put the shellacking on the Dodgers, win 3-4 at Chavez Ravine. But Dodgers came back despite a pretty good effort from David Peterson. He had, like, a very much like an old school type of performance. I think it was like 7 innings and he only had like 90 pitches or 80 something pitches. He was pretty good. But Dodgers were down 4-0 early in this game. Landon Ack just didn't have it. And, you know, Dodgers ended up coming back. And of course, Michael Conforto, you know, against his old team, gets the game winning hit. Who knew? But this was a weird series because I felt like in game one, I don't know how much you caught of game one, I felt like the Dodgers got extremely unlucky to lose that game because they hit, like, Shohei hit one to left field that I thought would have been a home run any other night. Paez hit one to center field that I thought would have been a home run. I thought Muncy barely missed one that would have been a home run. And it just felt like the Dodgers just kind of kept hitting the ball hard into outs all night long in that game one and then just barely lost. Came back, won, got a little lucky on that Freeman double that won the game because I don't know what that route was that Brandon Nimmo took to the ball. He, like, he had it at the wall, but it, like, bounced, like, 3 feet away from him. I don't know if
that
was like,
yeah, I
felt,
saw
like, I felt like he should have caught that. You know, I know that obviously Freeman hit it well, but I do feel like Nimmo should have caught that. Either way, Dodgers get it even. And then game three just wasn't close. Mets, I think, won, what was it, 6-1? 7-1? 6-1?
Yeah.
And then
Pa has home today. In the ninth, I think, you know?
Yeah. And we'll talk a bit about Pajes, but then, yeah, the Dodgers come back today, get the comeback win, and just really, really good team win for the Dodgers. I would argue a win that they kind of needed to have today just to sort of remind themselves where they were, because the Mets, I got to say, man, the Mets looked really good in this series. They played a damn good series. They looked like they were ready to compete with the Dodgers. Obviously, they are much healthier than the Dodgers are right now, but both teams did not have two of their star players today. Lindor was out for the Mets. He has like a fractured pinky toe or a pinky or something. And Freeman was out just getting like a normal day off.
He
definitely earned it. He did come in, but he got intentionally walked, which actually led to the go-ahead game-winning hit. But it was a very, very good competitive series pretty much from start to finish. And you watch this series, kind of get the feeling like this is a matchup we're going to see again later on in October, most likely, assuming that the Mets don't have a, that they don't fall apart in the second half. It kind of feels like they're for real at this point.
Yeah, Jesse, I think, I think you nailed that, actually. That was a point I kind of wanted to make, that the Mets don't really seem like a flappable team. And by that, I mean, they don't really seem like they get, blown away by the moment. They very much view themselves as a star-studded World Series favorite. So when you get the big dogs in town and the lights are a little bit brighter, I think the Mets are responding more in a way of, yeah, they're supposed to be this bright. We deserve it. As opposed to where we saw the Yankees come in last week, and it was a little bit, people were questioning if maybe the Yankees were fool's gold. That wasn't me. That was some New York outlets saying that. Jess, I've noticed a couple things, from being at the game. It's a little bit different trying to pay attention when you have an 18-month-old in your lap the whole time. But
yeah,
I was listening to Locked On Dodgers the other day after that Game 2 extra innings win, and they had mentioned that the crowd was overreacting a lot. And I think they had noticed that in games prior, but I really noticed it. Like, routine fly balls, the crowd is just erupting. And I don't know if that would come into play later with that Brandon Nimmo drop fly ball. Something about Dodger Stadium being like almost like a little like the Hollywood Bowl. It's carved into a mountain. So it's in some ways a bit of an amphitheater. So I think when the crowd starts all roaring and you're in the moment, maybe the ball does get lost up there. Maybe something mysterious is happening left field. We were talking about that Matt Holliday drop fly ball back in, I think, 08, we recalled.
Right.
But yeah, it's one of those little quirks of Dodger Stadium that I think you don't really expect. But yeah, to give the Mets some kudos, they win the season series over the Dodgers and will secure home field advantage in a potential meeting up in October.
Well,
which, like you said, does feel a little inevitable in the big scheme of things. And I think they're legit. I know we ourselves were doubting their starting pitching coming into the season, but dude, they've really looked great. Except for that one. What game was it? The game two, we put up 4 in the first inning, and I forget who the starter was, but he settled in, and I think he like shut us out the next 6 innings.
It's not just that we got shut out. I mean, Pete Alonso also just was unstoppable this series. I mean,
he had 3 or 4 homers.
He homered today, homered twice yesterday, doubled the game before. He's leading the NL in RBIs right now. And then in game one, what did he do in game one? In game one, he was 0-for-3, but the last 3 games, he was pretty much unstoppable. And
he looks great, dude. He's confidence he was lacking in the years prior, coming into free agency, it seems like it's all subsided.
Yeah.
He's head on himself. Random little thing, something that I really liked at Dodger Stadium when Shohei comes up to bat. All the little screens, like on the in between the decks, they all have like the Lipsomatic like thing, like playing. It's like an actual ad for it. I'm like, dude, leave the Dodgers to make more money on Shohei when he's just walking up to the plate. So
smart,
sorry,
dude. I mean, dude, when you go to Dodger Stadium now, the amount of the Japanese ads that you see just all across the stadium are so noticeable at this point that, like, I would say 60% of the ads the Dodgers have up are some form are some Japanese brand, and there's a new one coming each week. So that doesn't surprise me at all. But, you know, I did after watching this series, you mentioned the Yankees, and I think it's interesting to have these two teams sort of back-to-back and comparing them, because it does feel like the Mets were clearly a tougher challenge for the Dodgers than the Yankees were. And, you know, but both are obviously World Series potential teams here. But it just – I came out of it feeling like one team was clearly – more realistic chance of winning a champion than the other, and that's obviously the Mets. So I'm just curious, after this series, you know, we haven't faced the Padres yet. That's coming up next a week from now. But right now, as it stands, do you see the Mets as the biggest threat to the Dodgers repeating as champions at this point?
Man, biggest threat in baseball or the NL?
Doesn't matter. I would say, well, NL, I mean, so on their on their way to getting back to the World Series, because I would argue personally that, like, I don't see an AL team right now that is a threat to the Dodgers of repeating. So I'm looking at the NL solely.
I think that's fair. And, you know, it's funny. As I said that, I felt kind of stupid because it does feel like the NL is the big brother league right now to the AL.
Right.
Jess, I really want to say yeah, just because of recency bias and getting to see him up close. You know, I saw Soto take Kershaw deep and just a horrific reminder of 2019. It was like just like getting war flashbacks. It was just like, dude, just Soto dropping bombs. Luckily that bum Rendon wasn't there. Anyways, but actually, Jess, I think it's those Chicago Cubs are actually the sneaky bigger threat to the Dodgers. If you'll recall, a little bit earlier this season, seems like the Dodgers and Cubs were playing each other every other week, but the Cubs actually already secured the season series win over the Dodgers. Dude, Kyle Tucker, Imanaga. I mean, I don't need to really go through everybody, but like, I don't know. There's something about the Cubs that felt very deep and just like capable to beat the Dodgers at their own game, which is just slugging you to death. And that's not to knock.
They play very good defense too. I mean, the PCA is like the best defensive outfielder in the league. Dansby Swanson is excellent. Yeah. And they it seems like the Dodgers, every time they play the Cubs, they just are robbing the Dodgers of hits left and right. It seems like their defense is truly one of the elite defenses in baseball.
Yeah, I felt guilty. I should have mentioned PCA, but it's like, you know, I didn't want to get crazy into it, but now we're talking. Like, I mean, they've probably got the best outfield in baseball.
Yeah, and I agree with that right now. Him and Tucker, I think, and Seiya Suzuki's having a great year. I think that's pretty clear that's got to be the best outfield in baseball.
Yeah, there's just an embarrassment of talent in the NL right now. Even with all the freaking injuries. But, yeah, I do feel like maybe the Cubs are a bigger threat. If you check their record, they're right up there with everybody for, you know, the top teams for best record in baseball. I feel like maybe we're just kind of missing them because we have the New York teams in right now, so we've kind of forgot. Or maybe it's just because that NL Central hasn't, or that NLAL Central hasn't been that competitive in the last few years.
Yeah.
Maybe it's everything like that working together.
I will say, I mean, I don't hate the answer to the Cubs. I mean, I think that you right now it's a pick 'em. You could take Padres, Cubs, Mets, Phillies, as you know, take your pick of any one of those, and like I wouldn't argue with you necessarily. Like I wouldn't say you're totally wrong, but what I would say is I do like the Cubs in terms of their outfield and their defense. The Mets, to me, feel a little bit like the answer. I do feel like they are a big candidate for like a big midseason trade. We have the trade deadline coming up, so I feel like they're right there in contention for a move to make a big trade for a starting pitcher. You know, the thing is about all of this is that you really have to look. Their lineup is way more well-balanced than I realized, and Soto is not having a good year. He's actually having a very unlucky season. His numbers, his expected numbers are much higher than what they've panned out to be. He's under 800 OPS. But if you look up and down their lineup, they, you know, pretty much everybody, with the exception of Mark Vientos, who's had a down season, you know, pretty much everybody is in the 750 to 850 to 900 OPS range. So they have a very well-balanced lineup, kind of a sneaky well-balanced lineup. But, I, you know, it's hard for me to look at any of these teams and stack them up against the Dodgers right now because we really don't know until we know how healthy this Dodgers team can be. Because, I mean, right now it's like, are the Mets better than the Dodgers? Yeah, I would actually say so right now while Glasnow, Blake Snell, Blake Treinen, Evan Phillips, who's out for the year, River Ryan out for the year, Roky Sasaki, Gratterall, Kopech, Emmett Sheehan, etc. You know, until we know that this team gets healthy, we're not going to know how they stack up with these best teams in baseball. And obviously everybody has injuries, but I'm even like Mookie, for example, like Mookie is not off to the start that we expected. He's had a down year to start the year simply because he came into the season with this illness that sidelined him. He lost, you know, like 25 pounds or whatever it was. He's still recovering from that. Got a fractured toe the other day, had a really good day today, but he hasn't had a good season. He's off to like the slowest start of his career. We're going to talk about him a little bit, but just with all of that being said, I just don't know if we have an accurate read on how the Dodgers stack up with any team in the National League yet, because we simply haven't seen them at full strength. We might not. That it's possible we don't. In fact, it's likely that we don't. But, you know, until we see this team with Glasnow and Snell and Kopech and Treinen and Gratterall, it's like, we just don't know what this team is, you know?
Yeah, and it's funny you say that. I was having that thought on my way home from work today. I was like, man, it's been kind of funny being a Dodger fan the last few years, because you just know the team that you see on the field in the first half in a lot of positions is the tryout squad for who's going to be the October squad, you know? And it's exciting, you know? We're seeing some new faces out of the pen. Urania was a guy
he pitched well today. Actually, he pitched. Yeah. He actually pitched pretty well.
Yeah, I'm glad because he didn't look great on Tuesday.
Right.
But I was actually like surprised. Like, dude, I actually haven't heard of this guy. It was made me very excited. Just real quick to touch back on the Mets, dude. I have a super hot take. I don't know if you're gonna think I'm really out of bounds on this. I think that the Mets are actually looking to not maybe get a starting pitcher because I think the market's a little bit thin.
Yeah, you're right. I would actually wonder if like maybe like Sandy Alcantara is like a fucking low risk, high reward potential trade.
He's got like an 8 ERA. I don't think you can count on him, but what I
think. I know. I'm saying low risk, high reward type of thing where like he might just need to change the scenery type of situation. But yeah.
Totally.
Yeah,
I love that. Yeah. I love that for Sandy. But what I think the Mets might do is they might look to bolster an already powerful strength of theirs, and that's their lineup, right? They got a lot of boom in that bat. But
which is actually kind of underachieved slightly there. Yeah.
I agree. But I think that there's an NL team that just signed somebody to an extension and just signed a big contract that is going to be looking to maybe retool and offload some money. But I think Ketel Marte could be a big target for the New York Mets, moving Vientos out of second, getting them all tucked in there, and having a real
Vientos is, Vientos is third. I think him and
Fuck, Beatty. I thought he was at second. I've been second.
Him and Beatty. Beatty is at second, I believe. Yeah.
I thought Beatty was at third.
McNeil and Beatty are I think McNeil, Beatty, and Vientos. Vientos, I think, has been actually platooned a little bit because he's been struggling.
Well, look, it's like we're saying, there's a spot there. But I think Marte makes a lot of sense. Let me tell you why. The Diamondbacks owner, hasn't been frugal in terms of acquiring talent, but he hasn't gone all the way in. He did just sign a great contract with Corbin Burns, who blows his arm out. Zach Gallen's contract is coming up. A lot of these pieces are finite in what was this, you know, best offense in baseball a year ago, and now has been saddled by some major injuries and doesn't look like they're going to get to that, like, 88 wins, maybe 90 wins, which it'll take to get that last wild card spot in the NL, especially not with the Cardinals playing the way they've been.
Yeah.
So I think that it does make some sense. I mean, I know he's like a marquee player for the D-backs, and D-back fans, I know you're going to hate to hear this, but I think there could be enough money and, you know, young talent coming to Arizona to make it worthwhile. So dude, watch out for the Mets, dude.
I mean, that would blow my mind if the Diamondbacks traded Ketel Marte. I mean, he's the best second baseman in baseball, and I don't think it's all that close right now. I think he's like pretty much the clear best second baseman in baseball. So
definitely,
I would be shocked if that happened, if I'm being perfectly honest. But hey, Uncle Stevie's gonna, you know, he's gonna reach for the stars for this team. I think that they're actually a contender to sign Kyle Tucker in the offseason.
I agree.
I think that's a total possibility, but
hey, when you spend fucking $800 billion dollars on a shitty right fielder, might as well go all in everywhere.
But you know, I do want to just to put a cap on this, give a little shout out to a couple of unsung heroes in the Dodgers who have been they've been given a little bit of shit of recent, and you know, give a little shout out to Tanner Scott and Michael Conforto, who did help the Dodgers win today. Tanner Scott pitched a scoreless ninth. Michael Conforto got the game winning hit, you know, so that was totally expected. But what we do want to talk about here is, you know, we have a couple of players like Andy Páez is just putting together an awesome season for the Dodgers. He's you know, he's kind of filling in for doing what Teoscar was doing last year. He's doing for the Dodgers this year. His OPS is in the 833 range. He's on pace for almost 30 home runs, about 30 home runs this season. And but Max Muncy, who had an unbelievable game the other day, basically won the game for the Dodgers, hit the game-tying home run in the ninth inning. That's the game that you were at.
What's up, baby?
Sent me these stats. What do you call him again? What's his nickname?
Max Cansey, brother.
So he is. So since he started wearing glasses, he's really turned it around. April 30th, he was hitting 180 with a 531 OPS, only 5 extra base hits, 0 home runs over 105 plate appearances. But since getting glasses, April 30th onward, he's hitting 277 with a 1.0 OPS, 015 OPS, 13 extra base hits, 9 homers over 118 plate appearances, and overall hitting 226, 9 home runs, 35 RBIs, and a 773 OPS. He's gotten it back up. And I mean, you know, this is what the Dodgers lineup really needed more than anything, especially with the departure of Chris Taylor. You know, this guy needed to produce. This was the veteran that needed to produce, because what was happening in the first half of the season, or the first, you know, quarter of the season, the bottom half of the Dodgers lineup was atrocious. So bad, and a big part of that was how bad Muncy was. And now here he is, totally redeeming himself and proving why the patience is paying off for Friedman to stick with him and not making a big trade for a certain third baseman in the offseason, which was a big talking point I see from Dodger fans with the trade deadline coming up. People are saying that the Dodgers should trade for Nolan Arenado. Brandon, has Max Muncy's recent production completely debunked that notion that we should not be trading for Nolan Arenado or a new third baseman in general?
Just when I think you couldn't be any more dumb, you go and pull a stunt like this.
Yep.
And totally redeem yourself, Max Muncy. You are a Dodger for life. Come on, King. Come on, King. I knew as soon as he had astigmatism and they caught it, that there was going to be a big change. And a big change there was indeed. Kid can see the spin on the ball again. You know, one of our favorite three true outcome guys ever. He can still fucking pimp one. And it's cool to see the big dog swinging that dick around again. You can see he's got that swagger back. And a dangerous Max Muncy is the bridge that this lineup needs, because it's that, you know, Shohei's boom, Mookie, a little bap, he's going to get on base, you know, Freddie, pick your poison, Teo's going to take a yard, Will Smith, best run scorer in the game right now. you know, and then you got Max Muncy, you can knock them all home. That gives you so much more play in your lineup with Tommy Edman, or, you know, if Kike's in, Andy Páez, you know, it gets a little bit more protection, and all of a sudden you feel like, oh, you're finally getting a break at, you know, it's the nine spot and Rojas is in. Otherwise, you're, you know, facing a 400 hitter in, you know, Ha-Seong Kim, who I'm bummed he had an 0-for game when I saw him, but. Dude, what an athlete. You can tell he's jacked just from fucking left field, bro. Let me tell you.
Yeah. You know, it's sorry, I'm making some changes to the notes here. I jumped
in. Better not, dude.
So the you know, I got a lot of texts from friends after Muncy made an error in the Kershaw game that you were at.
There was a ball
that went through his legs that should have been an inning-ending double play. Or that would have definitely shortened Kershaw, lengthened Kershaw's outing.
Yeah, it would have got him out of that fifth inning right there. Yeah. It would have saved at least 25 pitches. And we're looking at the start completely different, you know?
It gave the Mets a couple extra outs, which led to the Pete Alonso double, which booted Kershaw from the game. I get it. His defense leaves a lot to be desired. But, you know, when you talk about trading Muncy because of his defense, you know, you have to look at it like that. What you're getting in return is a clear upgrade. And Nolan Arenado, it seems like he's been waiting out. He's been holding out for this moment that the Dodgers make a trade for him. And I mean, in my eyes, he's just not doing enough to justify the Dodgers making this move. I feel like Muncy is doing so much more to justify why they should stick with him versus making this deal. Like, I understand he makes some errors, but he's not any more of a defensive liability than you know, some of the other better players in baseball who are never going to be changed positions simply because they are amongst the lead leaders in errors. But if you look at the numbers here, just in terms of comparing Arenado and Muncy, I mean, it's so clear at this point in their careers who a better baseball player is. Every major metric you can use other than defense, Max Muncy is favored. He had over 58 games. Max Muncy has a 1.3 war. Nolan Arenado has a 0.7 war. That's basically half the war. In terms of hits, it's pretty close. Nolan Arenado has 6 more. Home runs, Muncy has 3 more. RBIs, Muncy has 7 more. Stolen bases, Muncy has 1 more. They're both hitting .226. On base percentage, Max Muncy has 50 points higher. Slugging, Max Muncy has 55 points higher. OPS, Max Muncy has over 100 points higher. OPS plus, Muncy has 120 and Arenado has 87. So
that's nasty. That last number is nasty.
Yeah, defense is taken into account with wins above replacement and your overall production on the field. And Max Muncy is a better baseball player by all metrics that matter. And in terms of being a winning player, Max Muncy is more of a winning player than Nolan Arenado is. Trading for him just because his defense frustrates you would be a downgrade and a detrimental move for the Dodgers to make at this point. Max Muncy is the way to go until the Dodgers can go trade for like a Jose Ramirez or something like that. Because it's just not logical to make that move at this point. Nolan Arenado, love him, was one of the best at his position, but he is clearly a shell of himself and is no longer a viable option for the Dodgers in my eyes.
I think you just nailed it, dude. I'm going to call you the fucking Beatles because that was your Strawberry Fields, dude.
Thanks,
Jeffy,
buddy.
Let that one sing forever, brother.
Thank you, brother.
That was a good take. I was not only locked in, but I was riveted, brother.
Thank you.
Awesome. Dude, I honestly, what Muncy brings is a specific tool to the lineup, but it is hyper effective and it is, you know, something that the Dodgers have built around. And when he's clicking, I mean, I'll never forget.
So much more patient in Arenado too. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm just like, what I was going to get at was just like, he's got postseason experience that Nato just does not have, you know?
And yeah.
Like, Muncy's been there, you know? He was like last year, I know he was kind of a non-factor in the World Series, but do you remember he was hot as hell against the Mets in the fucking championship series? Like,
yeah.
He had some insane on base, like, percentage. I don't know, but I love Muncy and I'm glad he's a great Dodgers success story.
Yeah. And you know, I think that, like, we're seeing the lineup really clicking a lot more. With Muncy's recent success, goes to show what an important part of it is when you have a guy like that who, even when he gets out, he has quality outs because he has such a good eye. He puts together such good at-bats. He lengthens the lineup. He extends the outing for the opposing pitcher. It just makes it that much more difficult to get through the Dodgers lineup when you have a guy like Muncy in there. That's so important. I mean, Arenado's on base percentage under 300. It's like he's just not a patient hitter. And you just totally. Can't, you just, that just doesn't fit the Dodgers mold at this point. If you're not,
and can I say something too? I feel like there's a average. Lot of, I feel like there's a lot of like pull towards Nolan. And I remember he was like on Kimmel a couple years ago, like, they're like, oh, do you mind, you know, want to be a Dodger? It's like, oh, I grew up watching the Dodgers, blah, blah, blah. And it felt all staged and cute, but I feel like it's a lot of like hot privilege for Nolan. Like I feel like there's a lot of fans, there's a lot of lady fans that want to see another like good looking guy at third, you know, in those tight white pants. I was listening to Kike get catcalled all game. There's some guy like, hey, Bobby Chulo. And it was like, oh, dude, like their kids here, brother. Take it easy.
Yeah.
But I am an ally. Happy pride. While
I can't blame him though, dude. I mean, Kike is like one of the best closers we have right now too.
He's, yeah. Dude, nobody wears a defensive pitcher's helmet like Kike. But I'm with you on this one, dude. I think Arenado's best days are behind him, and I think Muncy is still one of the top 10, if not top 5, third basemen in baseball, even with the diminished defense.
You know, if Nolan is not a trade target for the Dodgers. Jeff Passan did make a suggestion for who a trade target could be with the upcoming deadline to help the Dodgers. And with the Dodgers' obvious pitching injuries, the plethora of injuries and of all of the, you know,
is that how you say it?
Our plethora, I don't know. But either way, I didn't go to college.
Urethra.
Yeah. Jeff Passan suggesting that the Dodgers could go after Big Dick Walker Buehler. To make a little reunion with the Dodgers.
Whoa.
Bueller's on a 1-1 type of deal with the Red Sox right now, who are obviously underachieving. They're not having the type of season they expected. It's not looking good for winning that division at this point. And, you know, Bueller is obviously somebody that has playoff experience that could eat some innings for the Dodgers. Quickly, do you see any there? Is there any meat to this boner, dude?
Short answer, I want to say no, but genuinely, the injuries have piled up so much for the Dodgers that I do think it is possible. A legitimate starter. I think if Walker can keep his ERA, you know, sub 4.
He's at 4.4 or something like right now.
Yeah, if it could be like 4.2 or below, 4.20. I think that there is a real possibility. Even if it is higher, I think they maybe go, you know what, we'll take this bet in the playoffs. Because Glasnow is still having discomfort in his throwing program. Luckily, Blake Snell is throwing, feels good. Emmett Sheehan, I think, is almost done with his rehab.
Kopech returns this weekend, too, and there is a chance that like Kopech could actually start some games for the Dodgers.
Yeah,
I would not be surprised if that happens.
Kirby Yates is back around the corner as well. But, you know, like we're talking earlier, Kershaw's not been effective. He's still looking for that out pitch. It looked like his slider was working a bit, but I don't think he was landing the curveball when I was there. So, you know, we'll see if he comes around. But Kershaw with a near 6 ERA definitely isn't going to cut it for the postseason. So hopefully we get Blake Snell back and Yamamoto, you know, is going to keep doing his thing. But Jess, another hot take that I got. I know the Ketel Marte one was maybe a little too hot for
that was fucking steaming. That was fucking oven hot, brother. I was
dang, brother. I popped that one on the desk. But my other hot take is that we have seen the last of Roki Sasaki pitching this season. I think they're going to mask a, like, maybe not a minor league start, but a rehab, you know, whatever, get his body right for the pros. So maybe we'll see him later this year. But I think in terms of, like, a meaningful starter role, I think we might have seen the last of him for this year.
I agree with that. I don't think that we can count on Roki for any sort of meaningful starting pitching this season. Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, Gonsolin's been giving up the long ball, so the odds of him making a postseason roster is slim.
Yeah, dude. I mean, think about it. Our second best pitcher right now is Dustin May. Right. You know, like, in terms of starting pitching, like, our second most reliable starting pitcher with Glasnow and Snell on the shelf has been Dustin May.
And that's no disrespect.
It's a credit to him. He's been good. It's just this is where we're at with injuries and performances.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, I think that, like, it's totally possible that we go after Walker. It seems like a low risk, high reward thing that Friedman loves.
It wouldn't cost much. He's a free agent next year.
And Friedman loves these moves. And you know, this is what we're going to be seeing a lot over the next month with trades for bullpen arms too. Yeah. I mean, we just saw with picking up Urania, with picking up Alexi Diaz, the Dodgers are going to be adding a lot of different bullpen arms to just throw some shit at the wall and hoping one of them sticks, that one of them could be reliable for the postseason, because they're just going to be a lot of innings eaters to save some of the meaningful innings for guys like Vesia and you know, guys like Banda. Definitely. And you know, the reliable
Trying
guys
when he gets back.
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to be seeing a lot of randos being thrown in the mix for the Dodgers to
Jess, may I ask you real quick before we move on, just because we're talking about relievers, what's your feeling on Scott right now? You know, he got it done for us tonight. They got it done in extras the other night, but you know,
I am not concerned about Tanner Scott. I think that this is a situation where I made this point before. This Dodger team does not have anybody that is eating innings right now, except for Yoshinobu Yamamoto and Dustin May, who barely pitches past the sixth inning.
Can I make two interjections on that about innings eaters? Because I don't want to disrespect our bullpen kings and, you know, young baby boy Jack Dreyer.
Oh, yeah.
And you are the king of his fucking fan club, dude. But Ben Kasparius, dude, Jack Dreyer right now is pitching to the tune of a, what is that, a batting average of? I can't see it. Oh, it's a 186 batting average allowed, dude. I mean, kid is thrown 32 and a third innings. He's just been a godsend, dude. In my opinion, a little reliever all-star worthy candidate. And Ben Kasparius, not to be outdone, dude, has got a quick one war on the season, 2.54 ERA, 20 games, a save in 39 innings pitched, 44 Ks. I mean, dude, those guys have saved our season in a lot of ways.
Like, yeah, no.
We're probably not in first place right now. Probably. Why am I saying probably? We wouldn't be in first place right now without those two.
Ben Kasparius has been the Dodgers' most important receiver. I don't even think it's debatable. In terms of Tanner Scott, I expect Tanner to be good. But I mean, if you look at his stuff compared to last season, which is what obviously earned him the contract, as his performance from last season, I think that, like, there is, like, a tick down in his velocity. The slider doesn't seem, like, quite as sharp. But I do think that we've seen some signs that he is still going to be an important pitcher for the Dodgers. And I thought he looked good today. I do think it's going to require some patience. And again, he just has been thrown in a lot. And these bullpen arms have been taxed. I mean, Vesia looks like a little bit of, like, a fraction lesser than what he was last year because of overuse. And I think that comes with just, A, you know, the long extended postseason run that bleeds into your off-season program. But B, this early onset of injuries that have really forced the Dodgers to go to their bullpen way more than they want to. They have way more injuries than anybody. Their bullpen has been used way more than anybody else in baseball. And I think that you're just seeing the results of it. But I think Tanner Scott is going to be just fine. And I think we saw him today look really good and sort of give you a sign of what he can be for this Dodgers team. But
I love that, dude. You know who's not been looking very good?
Who?
a certain all-star in the NL West, dude.
Wait a second. Before we go to that, I do want to say just one thing about Mookie before we move on.
Ooh, did I skip it?
Because another thing is about the Dodgers that needs to be recognized is that, you know, they're not clicking yet. Their pitching is not injured, is still injured. But Mookie hasn't really been Mookie yet. And just a quick stat I wanted to share on him because he had a really good game today. He has a 750 OPS right now. That's his career low. And he's never had an OPS in any season lower than 803 for an entire year.
Wow.
So, and this is on in a season where he lost 25 pounds to start the year. He fractured his toe the other day. He just hasn't been himself. He's still overcoming a lot of this, just trying to figure it out. I think Mookie is a candidate to have a monster second half breakout. That's going to be something similar to like almost like a trade deadline acquisition. He's going to be, I think you're going to see him a different player in the second half, really get his strength back. And I think that's this Dodger team, when he's clicking, we know how good they can be. So I think that's going to make a huge difference. And it'll help. I think it'll help the bullpen a little bit too, because we're going to be scoring more runs, which means we're not going to be using as many high leverage situations. And that helps out with the long run of a season as well. So
yeah, dude, I love that take. It's almost like upgrading a position. It's like, oh, we'll get a fully healthy Mookie, like as like the weeks continue to play out a little bit further from the toe injury, a little bit more time to weight train and eat right. And, you know,
also, he's playing shortstop every day, which he's never done before. Other than last year, he's never done before. And I cannot express enough how good of a job he's done at shortstop this season for the Dodgers. He's playing an elite defensive shortstop.
Yeah.
He has not at all been a liability defensively this season. And you're telling me that our starting shortstop has a 750 OPS and is a potential for breakout in the second half? Like, I'll take that every day of the fucking week, man. So I'm very happy with Mookie, where Mookie is at. And I think he's only going to be an even greater asset in the second half. And we're going to roll, dude. I think we're going to roll. So
I love that. I love that. Totally.
Go ahead. Sorry. Continue with what you were saying.
Yeah, man. So somebody else that's not been looking too happy, a little down in the dumps. Fernando Tatis Jr. His San Diego Padres just lost as of time of recording today to those San Francisco Giants. They split a series, a four-game series. But Tatis is slumping something super nasty, Jess.
Ooh. So
he was kind of the, I think, front runner for NL MVP. You know, Freddie has missed about 10 games this season. If before he went on this meteoric hot streak, and I think, in my opinion, has grabbed the bull by the horns and is safely the NL MVP favorite right now. But Jess, there was some reports out of Padres Twitter that Tatis has been slumping his shoulders and just down in the dumps and mired in the worst month of baseball he's ever played. I think he has a sub like 700 OPS for the first time in May in his career. But yeah, dude, it's not something you see from one of the swaggiest guys in baseball, at least not for a month long, right? Like, what do you think's going on, dude? I mean,
well,
something's got to give, right? He's not Michael Conforto.
No, he's clearly going through it a little bit. I mean, his numbers are still pretty good on the season. He's clearly going through it a little bit. Today against the Giants, the Padres lost 3-2, but did you see him pimping the fly ball?
If that's not the perfect analogy for just how it's going for Tatis right now, you hit one to right center out in San Francisco. You flip the bat. You're on top of the world.
He didn't just flip it. He didn't just flip it. He like flipped it in the air like, oh, I just fucking took the, like, it was like guaranteed this was a home run. Yeah.
Yeah, dude. That was a bad look, but
you know what he reminds me of a little bit, by the way?
Who?
He kind of reminds me of Yasiel Puig a little bit, dude.
Whoa. The wild horse.
Yeah, and I love Puig. I feel like he got a bad rep, which kind of ultimately led to the downfall of his career. Again, Puig was ahead of his time, man. Like, if Puig came up now, what he was doing back then in 2013, 14, if he was doing that now, I don't think that he would be like the most popular player in baseball. Like he'd be like Ellie De La Cruz. Like people would fucking love him, right? But he just came up at the wrong time. But Tatis, it seems like it's bad when he does that because he's supposed to be a leader on the team. He's paid like a leader, you know. And I just don't know if he has. I don't know if he has leadership qualities that Padres team really needs. And that, I think that's the biggest issue that this team has is that he's not a true leader like a Mookie or a Freddie. So that like when they struggle, you know, the team can pick him up, so to speak. It kind of feels like that team struggles to pick him up when he's struggling. You know,
yeah.
It's kind of the vibe I get.
Yeah, I can recall like when Corey Seager got called up and he was he had his locker next to Chase Utley's. I think this was like late 2015, early 2016. And just kind of like noting like, oh, wow, this is going to be a great influence on this young player. You know, this kind of nose to the grind school, like old school, like not missing any games type. Well, which, you know, Seager couldn't replicate because he's kind of injury prone, a much bigger guy over at short.
Yeah.
But my point remains the same, a grinder, a guy who really gets in there, makes every at bat like it's the last one he's ever going to have and fights for every pitch. And I don't think Tatis ever got that.
No,
you know, I feel like it's easy to point the finger at Manny, but I mean, he'd already been in the Padres organization before they even signed Machado. So while I think, Machado didn't do any favors, the Padres didn't sign Manny Machado to be, like you said, a Mookie Betts type, a Freddie Freeman type. They thought he was going to be that talent anchor. That they could build around, which he has been. I mean, I'm not knocking the stats, but in terms of like character and setting the tone as a professional, I don't know that he is your archetypal, you know, structure for lack of a better term.
And, you know, we say this knowing that the Padres are only two games out in the West right now. So they're still obviously a very good team. The Dodgers will be playing them next weekend. So that will be a big test for them. That's when the Dodgers are doing their Blake Snell jersey giveaway or bobblehead, which sucks that he's not pitching. That's got kind of a bummer. But then they're also doing their World Series jersey and their you know, some of their World Series replica stuff. So it's kind of a bummer there. But regardless, Padres are two back, so I don't think that they would complain too much here. In terms of where that's gotten them, I just think that it comes down to leadership. But let's do our final recap here before we go.
Real quick, just one last thing I wanted to ask you, Jess.
Yeah.
Tatis is obviously going to get out of the slump. Do you think there's enough time for him to earn just not a fan vote, but just do you think he's going to be an All-Star this year?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's pretty.
Do you think he's got enough name power, or do you think the numbers are there?
I think it's name power more than anything. I think the numbers are there. I mean, here's the thing about the outfield. Who would you replace Tatis with in the NL outfield? I mean, you have Pete Crone, Kyle Tucker, Corbin Carroll.
Oscar Hernandez.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'd put Tatis over Teo, but yes, there's a lot of options out there for the outfield right now. It's like Tatis might be like fourth or fifth in line to get.
So I'm just saying, I just been thinking about it. I'm like, man, this guy was an early MVP favorite, and you know, he's still a superstar in one of the hottest teams in baseball. So he's got that swag, but
I think he'll get in. I think he'll get in. You know,
we'll see. Only time will tell.
Yeah, we will see. All right, final thing we do. Let's just do a little standings update. Dodgers keeping a two-game lead over the Padres. Giants in third, three games back. Diamondbacks are .500. They're 6.5 back, but they've won four in a row. So they're starting to they're starting to get things together. Yeah. And the Rockies, they are up to 12 wins. It was a big deal. They've won three in a row, Brandon. The Rockies. Yeah, three in a row. They're 12-50, 25.5 back. They are keeping it tight in the NL West. The NL Central, the Cubs are looking like that best team there, four games up over the surprising Cardinals, who are playing pretty well, four games back. Brewers are up to five games back. They're 9-1 in their last 10, so they're playing some good ball.
Wow.
Cincinnati is nine games back, and then the Pirates bringing up the rear at 15.5 back, and we cannot wait until Paul Skeens gets traded. New York Mets are leading the NL West. NL East seems like they are playing some of the best baseball in the NL right now. They're 1.5 up on the Phillies. They're nine games up on the Nationals, who are, you and I believe are potentially the NL East champions in a couple of years. Mm-hmm. Atlanta Braves are 11 back, and then the Miami Marlins are 14.5 back. The Braves have lost four in a row, and so have the Marlins. And then now we go over to the American League with Brandon Bullinger.
Oh, I've heard of that guy. Jess, I'm going to start with Central, where the best team in baseball resides, dude, the Detroit Tigers, with a 41-23 record, the best record in baseball. Who would have thought? Jess, do you think the Tigers are the best team in baseball, or do you think they're feasting on a dog shit division?
Well, they just lost to the White Sox today, unfortunately, but I do think that they are beneficiaries of a kind of a mid division, as the kids say. But I do think that they might be the best team in the American League.
I like that. I like that. Guardians in second place, six games back, 33-27. The Twins at 34-28. The Royals have been a bit of a disappointment at 32-30. And the White Sox at 20-43. Just happy not to be the worst team in baseball. In the AL East, you got your Yankees sitting at 37-23. Five games back are the Blue Jays at 33-29. Your Rays, your minor league Rays, 32-29. Red Sox, who I think were both of our AL East champions, 30-34. My God, the wheels have fallen off.
Yeah.
But that's who I'm talking about. The Orioles, 25-36. Dude, five games better than the White Sox.
The Orioles, by the way, they were off to a tear. They were playing really bad. They've won six in a row.
Jeez.
So the Orioles are a potential sleeper team here. If you want to buy some stock on a team being above 500 and competing for a wild card spot that you could get some really good odds on, put a sprinkle on the Orioles. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying put a little sprinkle on that team, dude.
Oh, my gosh, dude. You know who you should always put a sprinkle on, dude? Those damn Astros sitting at first place in the AL West. 33-28, a game behind the Mariners with the best rotation in baseball, 32-29. Cal Raleigh, is that how you say it?
Well, they're the best rotation in baseball, but they're not pitching like it. George Kirby's been bad. He took a line drive off the face.
Schnoz, right?
Yeah. So he's been bad though. So like once he starts pitching well, then you can say they might be the best rotation.
Yeah, the Mariners are 3-7 in their last 10.
Yeah,
the Texas Rangers are right behind them at 29-33. The Los Angeles Angels 28-33. And Jesse, my God, the sometimes Oakland Athletics, West Sacramento Athletics, John Fisher's A's are 24-40. They are 1-20 in their last 21 games.
Oh, my God.
It is about as bad as it could have gotten, and I can't believe I thought that they were going to pull together with a power of friendship and a minor league park and win the AL West. I look like a damn fool, Jesse.
Yeah, this is one I will not be putting a sprinkle bet on, Brandon. I'm sorry, unfortunately.
Yeah, dude. It's as ugly as it gets.
I like Tyler Soderstrom, though. He's a good-looking player. Hey, I like some of the players they have.
I think the A's have a ton of talent and should be a real playoff threat this year. But I think they're playing in a minor league stadium that is way overused. It's way too hot in Sacramento to be playing uncovered. And I think we're seeing the detriment to players on the field. Like we were mentioning with Tatis about not having the proper, potential player role model. Like we're not even talking about like not having the proper facilities or, you know,
yeah,
even feeling like you've made it to the bigs. You get called up and you're going to a fucking Giants AAA affiliate stadium to go play. Oh, cool. We're playing the Yankees. This is rad. I don't know. But it just sucks. I thought maybe there was going to be some like home field advantage for them because like, oh, they're going to learn the quirks of this ballpark or get used to playing in these shittier conditions. But no, it made the logical choice of just hampering them more frequently than any other team in baseball.
They're better
Jesse,
on...
It's sad times, and yeah. I feel like no owner in baseball just full-on pull spite moves to their fans than John Fisher. He's eviscerated the fan base for the Athletics.
Yeah.
And what we're watching is the rotting husk on the field, which is the 2025 team, which is loaded with talent and shouldn't be in this predicament in the first place. And it's bullshit for all those players. It's bullshit for the organization. And it's fucking bullshit for everybody that's a fan. And I don't care if you're a fan in Oakland. I don't care if you're a baseball fan in West Sacramento or if you're a hopeful fan in Las Vegas. Like, John Fisher doesn't respect you, doesn't give a fuck about the game we all love, and most of all doesn't give a fuck about that team because it's just another means to a fucking couple more dollars for this rich bozo. Jesse.
Yeah,
that's all I came here to say.
I got nothing to add. No home field advantage for the A's. They have the second worst home record in baseball. They are 10-22 at their minor league stadium. So, yeah, it's not good. But you know what is good? This episode. I feel like it was a banger. I enjoyed speaking with you, Brandon. Thank you, as always, to our subscribers, getting us up to 1,000 subscribers.
Wow. Our first K in the big leagues, dude.
Yeah,
won't
dude.
Won't be our last.
We are we're officially in the big leagues. We are a monetized YouTube podcast, so we're super grateful for that. Please continue sharing and you know, spreading that word of mouth about the best Dodger podcasts across YouTube. Yeah, sorry, I didn't stick the landing there. I apologize, but yeah, what does that say? Are you white balancing? What did that say?
Oh yeah, I'm white balancing. It says thank you.
Oh okay, got it. Yeah,
but I don't know.
Well. Yeah. Thank you, Brandon. And of course, as always, don't forget to like, comment, subscribe. And this is, join my Ben Kasparius fan club. It's going to be a wild ride this year. Brandon, this was fun, buddy.
Hey, absolute pleasure. Love getting to talk some ball with you, Jess. You are my break room boy, dude. The king of Crespi. Right. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise. You know, I'm the Lord Paramount. And that's what they put me on my papers. Love you guys. Thanks for joining us. And, let us know in the comments what we missed, what you like, what you hate. All that.
We will see you next week when we recap the series in St. Louis. We will preview the Dodgers, of course, their big matchup against the Padres next weekend. We'll be here. We'll be queer. We'll be banging back and forth like Trump and Elon, right? Right.
Whoa, dude. Happy Pride Month to those who practice.
This is, sorry, I don't know how
we're
I ended.
Rambling. Let's just get out of here, Jess.
This is my fault. I apologize.
Get me out of here. Get me out of here.